Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Hayemi, Maseches Chulin Daf Kuf Yud Beis. We begin four lines from the top of the Yomi. Boy Minei Rav Dimi. He posed a question, May Rav Nachman. So he asked Rav Nachman, interesting question. Maula Nuchi, Kadon Milcha. What about placement of a kad, a container filled with salt? So basically a salt shaker, except this one is open and exposed. Can I place it next to Gabe, next to Kada de Kimcha, container with Kimcha, which was a milky dip containing milk, yogurt, basically a milky ketchup. Okay, can I put the salt next to the ketchup? Amalei Osir, he says you can't do that. Now Tosis points out, he would never ask, can I put milk next to meat? Of course you could. You want to send, a box of shalachmanis to your friend, you can take a box, put a container of a milky product next to a container of a fleishig product. There's no issue there. As long as you make sure they don't touch and there's no, crossover, there's separation, of course that's okay. So why was he asking about the salt, and why did he say it's forbidden? So he says like this, because salt is not milchik or fleishig. It's parv, it's a neutral entity which can really be used both ways. So there is a very real concern that the milk may have splattered into this salt, which was situated nearby, which was being used at breakfast, and later on at dinner. You might take that same salt and use it together with your meat meal. So over here, Dafka, specifically over here, we have a neutral entity. Something parv, like salt, which can go both ways, can serve a milk meal, can serve a meat meal. Don't place it next to the kimcha, lest it splatter into that salt, which in turn may be used together with the meat later. Amalei Osir, you can't do that. Right? And my understanding is that the common practices regarding salt shakers as well. We have separate salt shakers. One for milchik, one for fleishik. So that there's no, to avoid any crossover. Amalei Osir. Next question, the chala. What if this container is filled with vinegar? Okay, which was also used as part of their meal. My, can that be placed next to the milky ketchup? Amalei, in this case, he says, that's okay, Shari. Umayishnos, what's the difference? You'd assume the same concern applies, same concern as the applies to the salt would apply to the vinegar too. Umayishnos, what's the difference? So you respond in a joking manner. Take a little kur de milcha, when you go measure me up, a kur, a huge amount of salt, then I'll tell you. Figure it out. So what is the reason, my time? So what is the difference? Answers the Gemara. You know what the difference is? Even if a little milk splatters into that vinegar, it becomes bottle, b'shishim, becomes nullified. The flavor is indiscernible. In which case, there's no danger of turning around and using that vinegar for meat, as opposed to the salt, which is a dry, solid entity. It's not a liquid. The splattered milk will just sit there. It's perched. It clumps up with that salt. And therefore, it presents a concern of being used with meat later on. Right? My time, what's the difference? Hi. The splattered milk in the salt is a isura be'ena. The isra is intact. It's there. Vahai, as opposed to the splatter into the vinegar, it becomes it dissolves. It becomes nullified. Vahai, let's say isura be'ena. The isra is not intact. In which case, even if you turn around and use that vinegar with your meat, you're okay. Here comes another story. There was this little birdie. The nafal lekada de kimcha ended up somehow in a container of this ketchup, this milky ketchup. Now, of course, everything was cold. So the question is, can I just rinse off that bird from its milk and use it. Sharye, who allowed it? Rav Chinana, Brei de Rav, he allowed it. We Parshuni from this town Parshuni, he said it's okay, just rinse it off and you're good. There's no issue of Basar Bechalav. Amar Rav, I'm impressed. Man Chokim, who's this wise man, Lemishri, who would permit Kagavna this type of situation? Elav, if not, that it was this great man, Rav Chinana, Brei de Rav, and Parshuni. Now, we have to point out that this Kimcha is number one milky, number two it's salty. It was a salty type of dip, salty ketchup. And despite the fact that it was salty, you'd think that, you know, when it interacted with the salty material, it would have a similar effect to being cooked in it, as we learned the other day, right? In which case, you can't salvage this birdie. Once it absorbs the milky, ketchup. No, says Rava, actually, he's right on. Despite the fact that it has saltiness, but it's not exceedingly salty. It wasn't heavily salty, just a slight. Salt does not have that absorption effect, because he holds. Ki amar Shmuel maliach hariu kuruseach. When does Shmuel equate saltiness with cooking? That's only when it's exceedingly salty. Hani mili hecha de einoy nechal machmas milchad. And when it's really heavily salted, it can no longer be eaten on account of its salt content. Like, you know, when they use salt as a preservative. It's so heavily salted. That is kuresech, like it's boiling, it's cooking. Avalai, but in this case, the kutcha, this dip, this ketchup, hari nechal machmas milcha, you see everybody's eating it. Despite its salt content, apparently it's just lightly salted. There's no issue. Now, when do we say just rinse off the bird? That's when it's raw. In which case, it's, you know, smooth and it's not really absorbent. About salty, but once it gets roasted and it gets sort of dried and creviced, boy, klifa. In this case, the milk does affect it somewhat and has to be peeled all around. The top layer has to be peeled to remove its milk content. Furthermore, if it was roasted and also has visible cracks, you see it's cracking open, then the entire bird is us, not just the outer surface. Likewise, even if it wasn't roasted, which has, you know, like a drying effect, which would attract moisture, even if it wasn't, it was just cooked. What is metabol betavlan? Seasoned with spices, that also has a similar effect, as she says, it softens it and makes it susceptible to absorption, in which case, if it falls into this milky product, kuli also, the entire bird run through is also because it's fully permeated with this milk. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Here comes a new halacha from Rav Nachman quoting Shmuel. Kikar shechata chalei abas. Okay, he's done his barbecue, he roasted up his meat, and we're speaking meat that was not yet kashered, meaning it still had its full blood content, then it was roasted, which is meant to remove, expel its blood. And now he's sitting down to his meal, puts his steak on his hamburger, and he's cutting his steak on his bread. Kikar, the bread, shechata chalei abas, on which they cut that meat. Asur la'achla, you can't eat that meat, that bread. Why? V'hani mila da'asmik, that's only true when the meat still looked very reddish, which indicated blood content. V'hani mila da'avri. And again, it's only an issue if, upon cutting that meat, that reddish substance, i.e. blood, got absorbed into that piece of bread. Rashi says, "Avar mitzida litzida, achenira mishnei tzad." And went through and through. It permeated. It penetrated the entire piece of bread through and through. So you see, there was a substantial amount of this bloody material. That's only true when it has like a thicker consistency, a blood-like consistency. But if the reddish, you know, juice is like light and watery, there's no concern. And then Farshim explained, by the way, that we're speaking after roasting, and it's already been roasted to the point that it's edible, right? Or halfway roasted, a third, different shitas of what's considered sufficient to expunge the blood off that piece of steak. So Minatur is not considered blood anymore. It's just, you know, residue, remnants. That's not really considered asur. The Rabbanan Shmuel was concerned that for appearance sake, marasa ayin, it appears like he's eating blood. So if it has this, presents this, you know, phenomenon where there's reddish material going through and through, which appears like blood, you cannot eat it. In fact, Shmuel, when he encountered this type of situation, shodeg lekalbi, he tossed the bread to his dog. Rav Huna yav leleshamir, Rav Huna served it to his helper at home, but he himself wouldn't eat it. Now, how do you explain that? Manavshach, how do you explain this? Ishari, if it's allowed, lukuli almashari, it's good for everybody, even himself. Also, if it's not allowed, lukuli almashari, it's prohibited for everybody. Why is he serving it? Shani Rav Huna danina daite. Truthfully, Rav Huna disagreed with Shmuel. He says we all understand this is just, you know, juice. It's not really blood. Halachically, it's permitted 100%, but he himself was anina daiti. He was finicky. He wouldn't, he couldn't get close to this blood-looking, you know, piece of meat. Rav achale, Rav in fact would eat it himself. The car lady would give it a name. Chamar basa. Chamar means the wine. Okay, and it goes to Purim. The wine of the meat. It's just a juice. It's not really blood and unrelated to blood. Another halacha from the same source. Omar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. So now he's actually roasting the piece of meat. And they had this, we called it yesterday the beidugi, right? That schmaltz collector that they placed beneath it. Omar Nachman Shmuel, emanichan kli tachas basar. You should not place that grease collector underneath the barbecue, underneath this roasting meat, until you know for sure the blood is out. Achi yichla kol mara atmumis shabai, until the red coloration had left that piece of steak. Then you could place the collector beneath to collect the grease. But not before, because then blood will enter that. But no, I didn't. How do we know? I mean, we're not scientists. How do we know exactly at what point, you know, the red hue is you know, is dissipated? But no, I didn't. Do we have a simple method for that? Mazutra mishmed rapab. He says, I'll give you a rule of thumb. Mishatalatim rasa. Once it starts smoking, which indicates that it's achieved a, you know, adequate, sufficient state of dryness, because it, you know, was released, it was freed of its blood content, and now it's starting to smoke a bit. So now you know that it's blood free. Maskele Rav Ashi, says Rav Ashi, how do we know the entire steak is blood free? Vidilma, perhaps tato mata, perhaps the bottom part facing the fire achieved that dryness. Ilo le mata, but the upper part is still hasn't yet gotten to that point. Elam Rav Ashi. Rather, says the Rashi, the proper method is like this. Leslie Takan, the only way to fix this up, the only way to solve this is Elam Mishtabe, to throw into it Tarti, two Galilee, two pieces of milcha, of salt. Rashi explains, one you put on the steak itself, one down in the grease collector, we turned on the base. So what it does is as follows. The one on the piece of meat will assist in freeing the blood out of the meat, and the one down in the schmaltz collector is going to attract any blood that possibly drips in there and put it off to the side. The mishfaye, now you'll gently pour the grease portion out of the grease collector and leave the blood behind. So if there's any blood, it's going to stay behind. Now, Amalei Rav Acha Bar Deravika L'Rav Ashi, I have a question here. You know, typically we don't pay so close attention to names, but here it's very important. We had two halacha is from the same source. Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, number one, which was the you know, loaf of bread on which they cut the piece of meat, which presumably had been fully roasted, right? Nevertheless, if there's any reddish residue, you've got to be worried about it, and you can't. We have the second lesson from the same source, Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, that once the roasted meat is no longer exhibiting redness, etc., etc., you're good to go. Right, so it would indicate to us at this point, we assume that steak is fully blood free. So why do we say that if you cut that same piece of steak on that hamburger and we see some redness oozing out, it's a problem? What do you mean? It's been fully roasted, cleaned of its blood. What's the issue? Again, Amalei Rav Acha Bar Derav Ikel Rav Ashi, Omi Amar Shmuel Hachi. Is that true that according to Shmuel, once you achieved a level of roast where the Mare Admumis, the redness, is gone, we assume the steak is totally blood-free and permitted? Amar Shmuel. Shmuel told us a minute ago, we take that same piece of meat. We assume we're talking about a fully roasted piece of meat and place it on that bread. You have to be worried about the redness. Amar Shmuel, kikya shechatach leo basa, the loaf of bread on which they cut that meat, asa lachla, you can't eat it. Why? If it's fully roasted, who cares about this, you know, red juice? Says the Gemara, you're right. Once the meat was roasted to the point that it's starting to, you know, it's no longer having that redness or whatever, the smokiness is starting to, then you can eat it, provided you eat it directly. You see, really, blood that's embedded inside a piece of meat, it's called dam ha'ivarim, is mutter, right? So there's no concern about, you know, blood actually just oozing out at this point. And whatever's still inside, any, you know, remaining blood residue that's perhaps trapped inside, it's okay, as long as you eat it directly, you just eat it. But if you're going to go cut it, that presents a new concern, because Shani Hasan, there is different, the agav dukka, due to the pressure, the sakina of the knife, when it's being sliced, pull it. That will force some of that blood residue out. It's going to expel its blood into the piece of bread. As we see, it's filling up with redness. That's the concern. So basically, there are two elements to meat roasting. Right? The second halacha of Shmuel was very simple. You take a piece of meat, you roast it up to the point that it's edible, go ahead and eat it, gesundheit. Whatever is meant to leave, left, and even if there is some, you know, minute amount of blood trapped behind, it's okay. It's called dam ha'ivarim. It's embedded inside the meat. It's fine. Provided he's not going to cut it. But once he's going to go cut it, that cutting, that pressure, may force some of that blood out. And once it leaves its abode, it becomes asur. And that was reflected in the first halach of Shmuel. But in any case, the other Amirim disagreed, of course. They said, no, once it gets to this point, it's just, you know, juice, it's chamar basar, whether it's inside or it's outside, there's no concern. And Shmuel was concerned about appearance. So even though it's technically not blood anymore, blood has already been burnt out and dissolved, and right? But it appears like blood. Marisa ayin. And therefore, care is required. Nu halacha, Omar Rav Nachman, dog and ba'ifos. So he has fish, he has birds. In the interest of saving time, he's going to salt them all together in the same bowl. Shemalchan zemzeh, salt them with each other. Asurin. They're asur. Now Rashi explains. What's asur? The birds are okay, the chicken's fine. It's the fish that's a problem. Why? Because blood has left the chicken and was absorbed in the fish. Now, why are we only blaming it on the fish? Hechidami, so what exactly is going on? What does your bowl, your salting bowl, look like? Does it have holes in the bottom to drain out the blood or not? What's going on? Hechidami. Ibechli sheni menukav, we're speaking about a bowl which does not have holes, in which case the blood that oozes out of the chicken, by the way, blood of fish is okay, it's mutter. Concern is only the blood of the chicken. But if there's no holes, then ultimately, even if it comes out of that chicken, the chicken's not going to be saturated, it's going to be sitting in that blood, and it's going to reabsorb its own blood. We never use, right, for salting, we never use a bowl without holes. It has to have holes, it has to have a drainage potential. It doesn't have holes. I feel if it's just chicken and chicken. Forget about the fish. Piece of chicken that's being salted in a full container without holes will reabsorb its own blood. Nami yasir, of course it becomes asir. If your bowl, your salting bowl, has holes for drainage, then what's the problem? Whatever blood comes out trickles down and leaves the area. Even if it's fish together with the eifas, it's perfectly fine. Certainly we're speaking that it has holes. So what's the issue? Why would you say that the blood that exits the chicken enters the fish? Why would you say that? Says the Gemara like this. With dogim, the reason for our concern regarding the fish, mishum de ruffle, because of the flimsy, it's flimsy karmai, they have the flimsy, you know, membranes. Krum Shalahem Rach, Rashi says. They have a softer constitution, right? So their blood or whatever it is that they have, moisture, comes out quicker. It releases its moisture quicker than the fowl does. Kadmi Upalti. So their plata, their releasing of their materials, is at a quicker rate. It's expedited vis-a-vis the blood that gets released from the chicken, which takes longer. However, the birds, kmiti, they're stiffer, they're tougher. It takes longer to release blood from a oif than from a fish. Okay, so since they're working at different rates, what's going to happen? First, your fish will release its moisture, and only then will the bird do its own thing. So now the fish is free of its own content, susceptible to absorption of this new blood that's coming out of the birds. So if they're both releasing at the same rate, they're both busy sending their blood out, let's say two pieces of oif, there's no issue there because they're both transmitting outward. It's going out at the same rate, the same time. And nobody's going to be absorbing each other's material. But here, fish is done. He's resting already. He's at rest. He's no longer sending out anything. So now he's available to absorb. Right? While you're expelling, you're not going to absorb, right? While you're busy talking, you can't listen, right? But once the fish is done expelling, and only then begins the expelling process of the blood of the chicken, there's a concern that the fish might absorb that, right? Basar, the naichi dagim, after the dagim calmed down, from there, releasing of material, pliti, pliti, oifes. Now the birds will begin their release, v'hadu balimine, and the fish will now turn around and absorb that blood. Okay, Rav Mari bar Rachel, what happened to him? Imlach le basar shchuta badi basar treifas. He had a klimanukov, you know, a salting bowl with a drainage system, and he salted together two pieces of meat. Meat and meat. So you think it's okay. And what could go wrong? Two pieces of meat being salted at the same time in a perforated, you know, salting bowl. What's the issue? Problem is, one was basar shechuta, from a shechted animal, kosher meat, bahada with basar treifa, non-kosher meat from a treifa animal. So you can argue and say that's okay because, after all, whatever's coming out is coming out at the same rate and disappearing. Nobody's absorbing anything from the other. Also, Kamei de Rav. So he presented the question to Rav. Amrali says, no, you can't use it. Hatmeim. We have a brisa based on a pasuk by the creatures, the non-kosher creature. Hatmeim. The extra hay. Hatmeim. The unclean ones. Leesser is coming to add Isser to Tziron. Even the brine, the moisture coming out of these things, roitfan, the soup that was cooked along with kifash alhem, the fibers of meat or vegetables, and Farshim explained the main point is on the tzir. Okay, so now we know that even tzir, not only blood, actual blood, but even tzir, some sort of brine or moisture coming out of these non-kosher materials, are deemed forbidden. Okay, so how does that change our equation? Explains Rashi, it's true that the blood content of both pieces of meat leave the at the same time, okay, which precludes any absorption. However, the tzir, Rashi explains, it's noyach, the bottom line, noyach libalam en adam, it gets absorbed quicker, easier. The rate of absorption of tzir is quicker than blood. So basically, the kosher meat, which is expelling its blood, so even though it's busy expelling, but it can sort of on the side absorb some of the tzir, which just goes in much easier. It's a thin, lighter, more liquefied material. So therefore it's awesome, because it presents a concern that the kosher meat will now have absorbed some of the tzir of the non-kosher meat sitting alongside it. We turn to the next page. Now, why did Rav have to resort to this new braisa based on a pasuk, a new drasha? He could have simply responded, look, that's being salted together with non-kosher material, it's like being cooked, right? With non-kosher material. It could have simply related to Shmuel. Reference Shmuel's halacha. Shmuel teaches us, moliach. When something is heavily salted together with something else. Harei hukaris, yes, like it's boiling, it's like being cooked together. We cover something which is pickled, it's like being cooked. Well, even the Shmuel, if only from Shmuel's halacha, haramin, I would think, it doesn't really apply in this case. It's a general formula, but it doesn't apply in this case because hanimi l'daman, that's only true when you have a blood issue. Salted together with blood, that's an issue. Aval tziran v'roit fan loy, but here it's just a tzir, it's a, Rashi says, zeya. It's like sweat. Perhaps it's just like a weak derivative of coming off the non-kosher material. It's not even asr. Who said it's forbidden? It's not essentially part of the, you know, actual material. It's just some sort of moisture dripping out. Some take out the word v'roit fan loy. So perhaps in this case, no concern. Kamashmon, that's why Rava had to highlight the brisa based on a pasuk. You're meant to know that even some brine oozing out of a non-kosher piece of meat is usher. And since in this case there's a concern that the kosher absorbed that non-kosher tzir, it's usher. Meisvei comes a kasha. So again, what's the halacha? Chiddush is that you have two pieces of meat sitting together. Even though they're both busy being poilate, right, releasing their respective bloods, nevertheless, if there's a tzir concern, because one of these is non-kosher, which is exuding unkosher tzir, tzir works on its own track. So even while you're busy expelling your blood, you can still sort of absorb tzir on the side, and that's a concern. Maybe it comes a kasha on that concept. From a brisa, which seems to say that it's okay. Dagtar, shemlochem dagtame. You had two pieces of fish. One was of a kosher variety, dagtar, which is salted together im shemlochem dagtame, a non-kosher piece of fish. Both being salted, it's mutter. It's okay. We're not concerned that the kosher fish absorbed from the non-kosher. My love, let's assume Shayishnei Meluchim. That they're both being salted. Okay, so even though the non-kosher fish is saturated with salt and expelling and releasing some of its brine, there's no concern that the kosher piece absorbed that brine. Why? Because they're busy expelling whatever they have to expel. They're expelling, and they're not absorbing from each other at this early point, at this point. In contrast to Rava, who says that even during the salting process, you can still absorb the tzir. Loi, no. Kigan shehaya ha-toyer moliach. Only one of these was salted. The kosher one was salted. The tami tafel. Tafel means without salt, plain. There was no salt on the non-kosher piece of meat, so there's no expulsion of tzir. There's no brine. Right? There's no brine being generated if you're not salt. But in a case of Rava, where the non-kosher piece was salted and generates brine, perhaps in this case, I am concerned that the other priest absorbed some of that brine. Ask the Gemara, how could you say that we're speaking that the non-kosher meat, non-kosher piece of fish, in this case was not salted? But the Tani Sefer, take a look at the next part of the brice. Hoya tohi maliach, avalam hoya tohi maliach, v'tamei tafel, mutter. But if only the tohi was salted and the tummy was tafel without, so then it's okay because no, it's not a brine generator. So that's the next case in the brisa. Machlal d'reisha, v'shnei meluch maskinim. Perhaps in the first part of the brisa speaking that shnei meluch, and they're both salted. And nevertheless, there's no concern. No, pirushka mefareish. The second part of brisa is merely explaining, clarifying the circumstance in the first part, in the first halacha. So this is what we learn. The kosher with the unkosher is okay. Keta, when is that? Provided it's only when the tummy was unsalted. As per Rava's halacha. Because otherwise, there's a brine generator and a brine absorption. How can I even prove to you? that this is the correct understanding of the price. This agadaitach reisha shnei meluchim, because if you'll propose that the first part of the price is speaking that they're both salted, and still we're not concerned about this brine being transferred from the non-kosher to the kosher, hashta, look. So what's the point of discussing the next part of the brisa? If even shnei meluchim shor, if they're both salted, it's okay, we're not concerned about brine transfer, tohar maliach v'tamei tafel m'boy. It goes without saying, it's obvious that if only the tohar is salted and the tamei is unsalted, of course it's okay, no need to talk about it. Oh, so apparently what we said is correct, that the brisa is just talking about the same case and explaining itself. This is okay, provided there's no salt on the non-kosher. But otherwise, it's a problem, because it's a brine generator which gets transferred as per Rava. Even Shemal La'iri says, well, not necessarily it's going to prove anything, because we can still perhaps propose that the brisa in the beginning is discussing when they're both salted. Even Shemal La'iri, Tana Sefer L'Gliteration. Sometimes the brisa goes on with another case just to clarify what the first case was about. It's sort of a contrasting symmetry. Tonei Sevel Aglid Reisha, it's coming to explain the first part of the Braisa. Deloy Teme, don't think Reisha, the first case was Torah Moliach V'Tamei Tafel, that only the Torah was salted and the Tamei was not. And that's why it's okay. Aval Shnei Meluchin Aser. But if they were both salted and the non-kosher is generating brine, it would be a problem because of the tzir. That's what I would think. Tana Sefer. That prompts the brisa to continue and say, well, Tohar Maliach V'Tamei Tafel, that in the case where it's Tohar Maliach V'Tamei Tafel, so the tummy is not salted, then, you know, it's okay. Machlal, this is coming to infer to us that the first part of the brisa will speak about a different case. Even when they're both salted, it's still okay. Reisha, Shnea, and Meluchin, they're both salted. Vafilo Hishon is still okay. And, unlike Rava's Chiddush. So, end of the day, we don't really have a proof or a refutation on this brisa regarding Rava's Halach. Tashma, let's make another attempt at a kasha on Rava. Again, what's Rava's Chiddush? Typically we say when you're busy expelling, you're not going to have the presence of mind to absorb, right? However, when there's tzir involved, tzir is just like watery, you know, substance, not as thick as blood, it's like a more of a watery type of consistency, it's brine, that perhaps could sneak its way in there, even while I'm busy expelling something. And therefore Rava says, you can't have the fish that was salted with the eifos. Sorry, you can't have the basar shchuta that was salted with the basar trefa, because of the tzir that gets transferred from the trefa to the shchuta. Tashmai comes another kasha. Misefa the sefa, the very end of that brisa, last part of the second part of the brisa, which says like this: Avalam hoya tamei maliach v'torah tafel. What if it's exactly the opposite? He's salting two pieces of fish together. Tamei and Tohar, right? Tamei is unkosher, Tohar is kosher. Tamei is heavily salted. Tohar is not salted. So which one is generating brine? The non-kosher piece. Aser, you can't have the kosher piece either, because it absorbed that brine. Okay, so let's analyze this halacha further. Tamei moliach v'tohar tafel d'aser. Apparently it's only in this case where the non-kosher was the salted one, generating unkosher brine, and the kosher one was the unsalted one. In that case, it's a problem. Because let's realize, when the piece is not salted, it's just plain, it's not expelling anything. It's not busy sending anything out. Of course it could absorb. And what's it going to absorb? The brine coming from the tamei. Tamei moliach v'tohar tafel d'aser. Only that case is a problem. Because there's this lack of, you know, symmetry. He's oozing out and he's absorbing. Hashnei and Meluchin. Sorry, but they're both salted at the same time. Apparently it's okay, because they're both transferring outward. They're sending out. They're not going to be absorbing any of each other's tzir. It's a kashan rav. Oh, says the Gemara, no. Perhaps the same halacha would apply if they're both salted because of the brine transfer. So why did the Braisa choose to dwell on this unmatching, you know, mismatched case, rather than just a plain case that they're both being assaulted? I did Tana Reisha, Toir Malich, but Tamei Tafel, on account of the case in the Reisha, where it was a one-way deal. The Toir was the one salted, and the Tamei was the one that was unsalted. And the Braisa was teaching us that in this case, there's no concern of any transfer, because the Tamei is not active at all. So on account of that case, the Braisa cited, you know, a matching case, where it was a one-sided salting. Tanu Nami Seifa, the Braisa came back in the Seifa with a similar case, just exactly the opposite, right? In the reverse. Tamei Maliach, Torah Tafel, that the Tamei was salted and Torah was unsalted. And since there's a transfer of brine from the Tamei to the Torah, it's a problem, but perhaps the same exact halacha would be if they're both salted, because there's a transfer from one to the other, despite the fact that they're both actively expelling their residue, as per Rava's opinion. So at the end of the day, once again, we don't really have a conclusion on this matter from the Braisa. But in any case, Rava did teach us that despite the rule that when you're expelling and not absorbing, that only applies if they're expelling, you know, blood or whatever, but if there's tzir, which is a totally different type of entity, that can be absorbed even while you're actively expelling. So if you do malicha with the basa shchuta, with the basa treifa, the basa shchuta is asr. Prior to that, we discussed a similar case of the dagim, which are more flimsy and you know, more absorbent than the eifais. So you salt them together, even in a proper drainage, you know, bowl. There's an issue because the fish are more available to absorption, more susceptible to absorption, and they will they're liable to absorb from the eifais, from the blood, before it gets a chance to trickle out. We discussed roasting unsalted meat, you know, the meat with its blood content. At what point is it permissible once it burns out the blood? What happens afterwards if you still have some red juice? According to some sheet, it's not a concern. According to Shmuel, it's a concern on account of appearance, maris ha'ayin. Prior to that, we discussed a bird that dropped into the ketchup, various halachas in terms of what to do, rinsing, peeling, or if it actually penetrates the entire thing, it would be asur. And prior to that, we had the question of the salt shakers. And they need to take care that there's no crossover between milchiks and fleishiks. All the best to you, and atzlach rav.